Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. I am Steve Woodward. My co-host and trusty sidekick, David Hensley, is away. We'll track him down eventually and bring him back from his globe-trotting ways. We are delighted to remind you that this program is sponsored by The Marketplace, restaurant and catering since 1980. Your go-to for fabulous breakfasts in the morning and great lunches featuring sandwiches and soups made in-house for breakfast. They now have a killer breakfast burrito lineup. And for your catering needs, they run the gamut from small intimate office parties to the big blowout wedding that every family loves to pay for. So the Marketplace since 1980, thanks to Luke and his team for supporting this program. I want to remind you that coming up, we will have a conversation with Sherry Lynn Womack. Sherry Lynn Womack resides in Lee County. She, in fact, is the chair of the Lee County Board of Education, has been for a number of years. And recently, she came forward as a candidate for the House seat in the General Assembly up in Raleigh. She is a candidate for North Carolina District 51, which encompasses all of Lee County and portions of Moore County. So some of you within the sound of my voice will have an opportunity to vote for Sherry Lynn Womack when the primary season begins early next year. And we'll be talking to Sherry Lynn later on in this wonderful program. As we always do, we begin by identifying this week's public enemy, number one, numero uno. And this week, we take no pleasure in describing this public enemy number one, because this public enemy number one is a vast and broad, growing blight on the world that we live in, really, as we are seeing religious and political persecution literally around the globe devolving into its worst possible forms, violence and cold-blooded murder. Of course, I'm referring to the recent mass shooting in Sydney, Australia, on the beautiful Bondi Beach at the outset of the Hanukkah season, in which Jewish people were indiscriminately shot and killed by two jihadi gunmen who found them defenseless on this beach and proceeded with some target practice, which was ghoulish, and ended up with a death toll of about 11 people, I believe. It might have risen since then, but 11 to 15 people killed and many others injured. But much closer to home, we are still trying to wrap our brains around the vicious targeting and murder of a beautiful young lady, a student at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, a native of Alabama, the Birmingham area, who was the vice president of her campus College Republicans Club. Frankly, I was shocked that Brown University has a College Republicans Club, but she was part of that small group of Republicans in a very lefty campus and part of the country. She was gunned down in her prime, along with another male student. And of course, there were, as always, collateral damage, others injured by this random, or maybe not so random, gunfire. And there's no way to really comprehend seeing this. And of course, this is just another case. We saw the acts in of murder in Washington, D.C., the two National Guard officers, one of whom succumbed to her wounds, the other who is recovering, and on it goes. But Ella Cook at Providence, it's obvious, was a target of some kind. Let's play clip two.
You know, there are reports that say that Ella was shot point blank in the face and then shot as many as seven more times. And then according to another witness, the other individual that died, Muck, that he was walking along the same path as her. And to me, these all lead to, you know, that this looks like it was an assassination of Ella. And if so, you know, was it because that she is a young Christian conservative, the vice chair of the College Republicans? Like, this seems very, very, very relevant. And why can't they, they're eyewitnesses to these accounts. Why can't they just come out and say these things?
Yeah, that just gives me chills to think about that. And the reports from the other 50 or 60 students in this room, in this classroom on campus, a class was not in progress. It was a prep session for upcoming final exams in economics, I believe. But the students estimate 40 to 50 shots were fired. It is probably a miracle that more of them just weren't taken out. But the young man who was leading the session tells ABC News that the shooter walked in and he looked him right in the eye, and yet that guy wasn't shot at. So as time goes by, we'll hopefully understand better what exactly went down. But in this Christmas season, what a tragedy for the family of this young lady, Ella Cook. Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama went to the floor of the Senate to honor her life and her legacy. Play clip one.
She also loved kids and spent much of her time babysitting and serving in Sunday school. She believed her highest calling was to be a mom one day. But the most important thing to know about Ella is that she was a devout Christian. She was very involved in her church, the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, and was loved by everyone there. In her obituary, it says, not only did her personal faith shine out like a bright Christmas star, but she loved others as real people, not as objects. Ella loved God with her whole heart, and she loved people with her whole heart. The Reverend of Ella's church described her as an incredible, grounded, faithful, bright light who lifted up those around her. I can't think of a better legacy to leave behind than that. She went off to college at Brown, where she was studying French, mathematics, economics, and was obviously very, very smart. She also was a patriot who loved this country, and she served as vice president of the College Republicans at Brown University. She was clearly a very courageous young lady, and I can't imagine that was an easy job on such a liberal campus as Brown.
That is perhaps a vast understatement, and again, just a heartbreaking story. Of course, this comes in the same year. This comes 3 months after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, another devout Christian and conservative Republican and leader of young people, an inspiration to many young people. And we'll talk a little bit about the latest on the story of his untimely death a little later in the program. We now transition to our relatively new weekly feature where we identify public embarrassment number one. We go from public enemy to public embarrassment, number one. And this one, you know, under the category of you can't make it up. We all know in our lives people who just love their pets, and they place them sometimes in greater esteem and adoration than some of their fellow family members and other humans in their lives. Here we have the story of Amanda Reynolds, an attorney licensed in New York and Utah. And we learn about the story of a dog named Finnegan, her 8-year-old golden retriever, entirely dependent on her for food, shelter, medical care, training, transportation, and daily living. If you've ever had a child, that sounds like a similar description. According to Reynolds, however, what this really means is that Finnegan the dog satisfies every meaningful element of dependency recognized under Section 152 of the Internal Revenue Code, except for the little tiny detail that she's not a human being. As a result, Amanda Reynolds has asked the court in New York to determine whether pets can be recognized as non-human dependents under federal tax law. Well, I mean, I'm sure there are pet lovers who are saying, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. According to the complaint, while dogs are legally classified as property, that does not fully reflect their role within families and households. Amanda Reynolds says that Finnegan's care responsibilities mirror and sometimes surpass those of human dependents. She writes in her complaint that for all intents and purposes, Finnegan is like a daughter and is definitely a dependent. And she wants to be the champion of tax write-offs for dogs. So,
Well, I don't see the problem with that, Steve. I mean, right now you can go get insurance on your pet, and the insurance companies are making millions of dollars off of it. So why not be able to write them off?
Well, we'll see how it transpires. I think it's maybe a little bit of waste of time of the court and legal system. But and by the way, where do I see Brad the producer on the scripture? I must have had the old version.
You did have the old version. Oh, I had to jump in here on this one because I just couldn't let this go without chiming in as to how funny it actually is that somebody wants to claim their pet as a dependent. But, you know, that being said.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, this individual is in the legal profession. So I'm not sure that she didn't think this through very well, how this might sort of, you know, I don't know, call into question her judgment to a degree. Yep. Well, we know one thing. That there is some questionable judgment at play in the case of Tina Peters. And in case you missed it last week, she was given a federal pardon by the president of these United States, Donald Trump. But in far left Colorado, authorities there, including the governor, the misery racked governor of Colorado, Tina Peters remains essentially a political prisoner. Her story goes back to the challenged 2020 elections, where she was the Mesa County clerk in Colorado. And she took the bold step of seeking to uphold election integrity by creating a forensic backup of her county's voting machine server. Her findings revealed manipulation in a local city council race and irregularities in the 2020 general election, meaning the race between Sleepy Joe Biden and Donald J. Trump for president. This, of course, what I consider a heroic and responsible act, catapulted Tina Peters into the national spotlight. And now today, she is rotting in jail in Colorado, She was slapped with a 8.5 year prison sentence for felonies, followed by an additional 6 month term. The felonies being standing up for the integrity of the election, but instead they slapped her with three counts of attempting to influence a public servant, conspiracy to commit criminal impersonation, official misconduct, violation of duty, and failure to comply with Secretary of State requirements. So there are attorneys actively working to get her out of prison. It may take more than just courtroom banter to make that happen. Let's play clip three.
Yeah, what I recommended was sending in Dan Bongino and his crew with the U.S. Marshals, the feds, since Dina Peters has been federally pardoned for preserving evidence in a 2020 election that was stolen. Send the feds in and get her out of jail forcefully if needed. That's what Cash Patel and Dan Bongino need to do. They need to go in there and show up with force and get her out of the Colorado jail system. Because she is a political prisoner held by the Democrats for preserving evidence in the 2020 election. What she did was legal. She preserved evidence in a crime, and she's been federally pardoned by the President of the United States. So that FBI and the U.S. Marshals Service need to go and get her out of jail and use force if necessary.
That is the voice of a retired Navy SEAL, Tej Gill, who is a frequent guest on Stephen K. Bannon's War Room program during the week, Monday through Saturday. Tej is a... I think he was deployed like 16 times as a SEAL. And interestingly, he mentions Dan Bongino. You know, since that interview took place, Bongino has announced that he's leaving his post in the Department of Justice and going back to being a well-paid podcaster. And I'm sure he'll have some stories to tell. But in any case, keep an eye on the story of Tina Peters. Say a prayer for her. She's 70-plus years old. She's not in good health. And not only have they kept her in the slammer, they have put her periodically into solitary confinement. This is the level of savagery that this Gold Star mom is enduring in Colorado. And, again, we should keep Tina in our prayers. Also in our prayers are all of the young people involved in Turning Point USA, the campus outreach organization founded by the late Charlie Kirk, assassinated in cold blood on September 10th in Utah. A curious, shall we say, I think that's the best way to put it, a curious individual and military veteran named Gary Melton, who is the founder of a company called Paramount Tactical. It's a manufacturer of tactical gear for military and law enforcement uses. You know, he was a guy who said, it seems like they're never going to tell us how in the world Charlie Kirk was assassinated on September the 10th. So I'm going to go out to Utah Valley University, the site of this bloody scene, and I'm going to look around the venue. I'm going to take some drone cameras with me, and I'm going to see if I can better understand what exactly happened that day. Let's play clip four.
Gary Melton is a former U.S. Army Special Forces Green Beret. You served as a weapons sergeant and sniper team leader, completing four combat tours. Following your military service, Gary, you held a position of unit chief and special tactics instructor for a federal agency. Today, Gary is the owner and lead instructor of Paramount Tactical Solutions, a company dedicated to professional firearms and tactical training. And I wanted to have you on because, you know, I refuse to go back to Utah, but you actually went to the campus and you retraced the steps of the alleged assassin. Tell us what you saw when you visited UVU.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do while I was there at the time, there was a lot of different don't know, conspiracies. We had the palm gun. We had different shooters in different locations. And what I thought was really important to do was go there. Number one, talk to eyewitnesses. I talked to multiple eyewitnesses while I was there. The other thing I did while I was there was I actually flew a drone. And what we did was a 3D map survey of the campus, and we have since built a 3D model of that that's interactive. People can download it. And that way, people can kind of see what is possible, what has lines of sight. And I knew just from what people were saying that some of these theories that they were putting out just weren't possible. I knew there was no line of sight. And I think, you know, if you're going to get to the truth, you need to get there. You need to talk to some people. And one of the things that really struck me on the ground there was exactly how easy this entire thing was. You know, before I went there, one of the things that was being portrayed was like, this was, you know, some big conspiracy. It's very complex. You need professional hitmen. It's 140 yards. It's so far, all these things. Now, I knew the distances was nothing, especially for a scoped rifle. I mean, that is, it's not hard. And then once you see the layout of the campus, you know, looking at it from a security standpoint, unfortunately, it was a real challenge. You know, once the information was out that this was the location, and then on top of that, once you look at the UVU courtyard, it is channelized. There's only, it's obvious where any sort of speaker is going to be. So, you know, the thing that shocked me the most was how easy this was. And then once we get into coming back and then hearing things like, hey, you know what, you need to be Spider-Man, or people think that you have to have some sort of special access or that you have to climb up to the roof, when in reality, you walk right up to the roof. The pathway that goes in between buildings is level with the roof. And the only thing that separates that walkway from the roof is, you know, a 3-foot guardrail that you just step over and now you have access.
Wow. I mean, in other words, Charlie Kirk never really had a chance, and even a novice shooter like Tyler Robinson, who's charged with pulling the trigger, apparently had a really pretty clear and easy way of first accessing the roof. It wasn't really a roof. It was more just like a level of a building that you could walk upstairs to access. So that tells you further what a terrible and tragic day that was. And, you know, I guess maybe we'll get justice for Charlie eventually in the courtroom. But pray for his family and his colleagues as well. You've heard of Governor Josh Stein, I think. He's the governor of North Carolina, it troubles me to say. And despite the fact that Immigrations and Customs Enforcement have successfully gone into many metropolitan areas and arrested all kinds of would-be criminals and actual criminals, people with records both in their land of origin as well as right here in these United States, despite having identified thousands of illegal immigrants who are on terrorist watch lists around the world and getting them the heck out of our country, Josh Stein sits down for his end-of-the-year interview with a Raleigh TV station and can't help himself in totally misrepresenting the activities that took place in Raleigh and Charlotte in recent weeks, again, to spare our citizens the threat of violent encounters with illegal immigrants. Let's play clip 5.
Yeah, no, I've not heard from the White House. I've not heard from the Secretary of Homeland Security. Obviously, I feel like they should tell the people of North Carolina what happened. If they were coming to North Carolina, finding people who are dangerous, who've committed crimes and need to be held accountable, put into our jails or prisons or deported, 100% support those efforts because we all deserve to be safe in our communities. But that is not what Border Patrol and ICE have been doing. If you look at the data in aggregate, we haven't seen the North Carolina specific data yet, but we've seen them operate in a lot of other places. About 3/4 of the people that they've detained have no criminal convictions whatsoever. And only a fraction of those who do have serious criminal records. So this idea of going for the worst of the worst, it's just not accurate. And what we saw in Charlotte was them going down the street and taking brown people off the street, or going to construction sites or someone's home and taking landscapers off the lawn. they were racially profiling people. That's not how it should happen.
Well, you know, I think we deserve a governor who doesn't misrepresent, mischaracterize what these activities were. To dismiss it as racial profiling means that he's willing to run the risk that, oh, I don't know, there'll be a young lady stabbed to death on a Charlotte light railway. Oh, wait, that actually happened, didn't it? And there was another stabbing in the last couple of weeks on the same rail system. We have the multiple cases of drunk driving incidents involving illegal immigrants. We have them driving 18-wheelers and recklessly on our highways. I just don't know how much collateral damage Governor Stein is willing to put up with so that he can advance his narrative of random plucking of people off the streets. And I don't know how we should not continue to call him out on that, because it's an absurdity, and our citizens deserve to be safe. He did say that, and I agree with that, and they will be now that these aggressive actions have occurred. Now, you hear a lot about how the blue wave is coming in the 2026 midterms, and you hear about how in North Carolina, Charlotte, and the Triangle, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, and to an extent Greensboro, are overwhelmed by Democrats, and whether they're lifelong or they've moved here from other places like California and Illinois and New York and Connecticut, whatever it is, you hear a lot of doom saying about the future of this state. But here's a little stat that came across the transom in this past week, which I think bears closer attention here on this program. As recently as, I don't know, 10 years ago, registered Democrats in North Carolina had like a 750,000 voter advantage over Republicans statewide. Huge, huge advantage. Well, guess where we are today as we close out 2025? In North Carolina, voters have closed the gap. They now trail registered voters among Democrats by 1,216 registrants. Let me say that again. There are now only 1,216 more registered Democrat voters in North Carolina than Republican. The gap is closing precipitously and has continued to do so. And I don't see how that doesn't impact races coming up. We're going to talk about one of those races here in a few moments when we sit down with Sherry Lynn Womack, running for North Carolina House seat in District 51. She would be running to be one of three members of the General Assembly who represent parts of Moore County, along with Neil Jackson and Ben Moss. We'll talk to Sherry Lynn. She is currently the chair of the Lee County Board of Education. Boy, I wish we had a chair like her down here in Moore County on our Board of Education, which is a dumpster fire next to a large train wreck. So let's talk a little bit, too, about the upcoming elections, because if you think, you know, 2026 is election season is way off on the horizon, well, you can think again. And here's the problem with all this voting apart from Election Day. You're not going to believe this. Absentee voting for the 2026 primaries begins on January 12th. Now, let that sink in. So you're having your New Year's Day festivities, and you're ringing in the new year and everything, and you're 12 days removed from the start of absentee voting for races that a lot of people haven't even thought about or focused on. That leads to the next deadline, which is voter registration. You have until February 6th to register to vote in the coming primaries. And then guess what happens on February 12th? Early voting begins and runs through February 28th, and then is followed by the following Tuesday, the first Tuesday in March, will be Election Day 2026 for a number of primaries across the board in various state races and school board races and others. We'll be talking a lot about that after the first of the year comes along, and we have our laser focus on those things happening. Now, many of you enjoy the sport of golf. I certainly try to enjoy it. Usually it becomes more like a torture session. But I do have to say that I enjoyed the perspective on the game of golf from a comedian named Jeff Allen. He talks a little bit about his experiences with golf. Let's play clip six.
She goes, "You're old and weak. You're going to die, and I'm going to be a widow because you don't move." I go, "What do you mean I don't move? I golf." She says, "You golf on a cart." "I actually have to get out of the cart and walk every now and then, babe. I mean, you know, it's not like I'm driving a cart by smacking the ball like polo. And where I hit the ball, the cart isn't even allowed. The woods, the sand traps, the water. I mean, woke golf. Woke golf is when you hit your tee shot, you get to pick your ball up and put it where you feel it should be." "I don't want to brag, but I had 42 hole-in-ones last week."
That is so perfectly on target as far as you know, the way these everything's about feelings with the woke crowd. I feel unsafe. I feel afraid. It's all about how do you feel? How do you feel? Well, I'm here to tell you that the only feelings that you're probably going to get out of golf are hurt feelings. Right, Mr. Producer? He's actually teed it up with me a couple of times. He's a very brave man, I have to say, because it's not for the faint of heart. The Washington Post, a little newspaper in the nation's capital. As a kid growing up, I revered that newspaper. Man, I just would have given anything to think about someday working for the Washington Post. But It's a fairly questionable publication these days, along with the other corrupt media outlets and newspapers and TV stations and so on and so forth, magazines such as the dreadful Atlantic. But they write a little bit about, and this brings us back to another element of the post-Charlie Kirk story. Here's the story, and it's kind of mind-boggling that they're even wasting any ink on this. The Post reports that on her way to becoming one of the most prominent voices in right-wing media, Candace Owens, you've probably heard of her, Candace Owens has suggested that abortion is a plot to exterminate black babies. She is black, by the way. She's blamed school shootings on the LGBTQ movement, which to a good degree there is some blame to be had there. And dismissed the moon landing. I'm talking about the all the way back to late 60s as fake. So not the first time we've heard that. But she's got a little out there after starting out as a very promising young conservative commentator. But the Post reports that it is her recent foray into conspiracy theories about the death of Charlie Kirk, including suggestions that it might have been an inside job undertaken with the support of French or Israeli government agents. This has many of her longtime allies in the conservative movement saying enough is enough. For example, Tim Pool, a well-known young podcaster, calls her an evil scumbag. She is burning down everything, and she's gloating and smiling while she does it. He told the Washington Post. Poole is one of several pro-Trump commentators who are accusing Owens of sabotaging the MAGA movement, Make America Great Again. And she just shot back and said they're all just colluding with Zionists to discredit her. She is just stepping in it every time she turns around. Among those Owens has irked with her theories is Kirk's widow, Erica Kirk, who succeeded her late husband as chief executive of his powerful conservative advocacy group, Turning Point USA. They recently had a private meeting that lasted for 4.5 hours in what observers were viewing as a bid by Erica Kirk to bring Owens back into the fold. And they have gone on to describe the meeting as productive, with Owens adding that tensions were thawed, although neither offered any details. Well, I don't really think they ought to waste, Erica Kirk and Turning Point ought to waste a lot of time on trying to reel in Candace Owens. I just think she's become a bit of a delusional, self-absorbed person who's really loving all the attention she's getting, even if it comes at the expense of the legacy and the life of Charlie Kirk and of the organization that he built literally one brick at a time. I really don't understand why it's necessary to waste another moment on this person, but you know, I guess time will tell how that all goes down. I did also want to say a word about the tragic circumstance that occurred toward week's end out in Statesville, North Carolina, at the Statesville Airport, involving a fiery and deadly air crash of a small Cessna jet. It's tragic in any case, but the jet was occupied by a NASCAR legend in this part of the country, Greg Biffle, and his wife and their children. The plane took off on Thursday morning and immediately returned to the airport to try to make an emergency landing, and that's when the crash occurred near the airfield. And this is awful. The images of this ball of fire that ensued on the ground is hard to look at. Golfers at a nearby golf club report that as the plane came over, they recognized it was very low and that it ended up leaving debris on one of the fairways, which suggests to me some type of uncontained engine failure where literally parts of the aircraft were raining down on this golf course as the plane was making its way back to try to land at the Statesville airport, which is in the lake, sort of the Lake Norman vicinity, north of Charlotte. Greg Biffle, I'm not a big NASCAR guy, but Greg Biffle came onto our radar in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Helene in September of 2024. In addition to piloting a jet, he also had a personal helicopter, a small one. And Greg Biffle took it upon himself day after day after day to load that helicopter up with supplies and fly into the zones of devastation post-Hurricane Helene and deliver supplies and food and water to people in an act of absolute heroism, because he was flying that little chopper into some very ominous and obscure places. And of course, tragically, he survived all of that and now has lost his life flying aboard a perfectly safe and reliable jet aircraft. So we ask that everyone keep Greg Biffle and his family in your prayers this holiday season. We are delighted to be joined this morning by Sherry Lynn Womack of Lee County, who is running for a seat in the General Assembly in District 51, NC House 51, your first foray into a political campaign. What is your motivation for taking this very big step?
Well, actually, it is not my first. I have been on the Board of Education in Lee County for 10 years, where I currently chair that board. And we've done some great work there, and I do believe in term limits. 10 years is a long time. The board's turned around. I'm extremely thankful for the process and the learning experience there as well, and learning how the dynamics work within the system. We've had great success there as far as being able, we've had to hire a new superintendent. We've made a lot of valid changes within Lee County, and I believe our schools are truly turning around. And
And public education is an area that has increased public scrutiny, I guess, these days, especially based on some of the things that parents discovered during the shutdown of the pandemic years, and found out some things about the curriculum that they weren't pleased with. And but I think Lee County is showing that you can reform public education and make it work for everybody.
Oh yes, I love Lee County. I know education is a big topic, and people would ask me, what would I change? North Carolina educates 1.5 million children, yet many traditional public schools are stretched thin. I support parent choice, but choice should never weaken the schools that most families rely on. We need smarter funding, better accountability, flexibility for our local leaders. And sometimes people will ask me at the same time, they'll say, well, wait a minute, that sounds like you're anti-choice. No, I'm not anti-choice. I'm all about transparency and accountability, and you can watch our board meetings, you'll see that. So it's not that at all. Parents should have the absolute choice to send their schools where they, I mean, their children to schools that they feel like is appropriate. But for my side of the fence, I'm a product of public education. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, not to brag or anything, I would say that I'm successful. I spent 33 years in the Army, 2 tours of combat, 2 Bronze Stars, Legion of Merit. I'm in a women's museum. I did emergency medicine. I learned all this stuff. But I got my start in the public schools. I was from one of those families where they're poor. And every day that you'd get on the bus, it was a sign of relief. And you learned every day. There's children just like me throughout Lee and Moore County that's what they look forward to. So I'm a big component for education, regardless of where it's at. But the parents should have that choice. But also the ones who don't actually have that choice, I still believe that public schools should be taken care of and completely a complete transparency and accountability. And that would be probably, for me, one of the biggest weaknesses. You see how everybody says be accountable. Well, when's the last time a board had an accountability officer stand up before the board every single solitary month and tell you where they stand and what's going on in our school system?
Yeah, we could use a little of that in this county. And it is worth mentioning and zeroing in on the fact that House Seat 51 encompasses both all of Lee County, but also a portion of Moore County. One of the reasons you're joining us today. So tell us a little bit about, you mentioned your military career, which is substantial, and I thank you for your service to our country. How has that part of your life led you to this moment now, where you're taking this step again toward public service?
Well, I think I've always been about service. I mean, you think about it, 33 years, and that's not saying something lightly, but I mean, I've had to tuck in my children like I'd never see them again because I felt like that's what I'm called to do. Heard someone say once, you know, God doesn't call the qualified, He qualifies the called. And you step back and you watch these things and you go, wow, I can do something about this. And I know it when people physically see me, I'm only 4'8", if you can imagine, a size 2 combat boot. But that's what I just realize, you overcome these things. God makes you this way for a reason. This is my humble opinion. And then you need people who will step up to serve, not because they want a title, not because it's a line on a resume. We don't need any more of that. What we need is common sense and people who are willing to work hard. And I'm the type of person who puts her boots on the ground and roll up my sleeves and get to work. I did that in Lee County for 10 years, and I'll be more than glad to represent both Lee and Moore County at the House.
Obviously, we have been going through a period here in recent years where our General Assembly, our House and Senate in Raleigh, have struggled to agree on a budget.
Yeah.
And that sounds kind of like maybe a little bit into the political weeds for a lot of people, but a lack of a budget has implications across all walks of life, including the aforementioned education, including military and disaster relief funding, all manner of things. Do you think you're going to be able to make a difference in this, ending this kind of stalemate mentality in Raleigh?
Well, absolutely. I know that I can try. That's all I can tell you. I can tell you, like, and I can just give you one example. In Lee County, our school board had a 12-hour work day. Why did we have that day? Because there were things, the mission must be done. And I'm the one who believes that you stay until the mission is complete. You don't say it's 4:00, it's lunchtime, I need to go home, et cetera. Get in there, whatever you got to do, hash it out, and come to a compromise. Because in the long run, you're not working for each other that's sitting in that room. You represent the people that's in your community. And you know they're tired of it. When you don't have a budget, what if you didn't have a budget in your house? I can't even imagine how you do Christmas spending or anything. So when, and it doesn't matter what party it is, when you start preaching about accountability and transparency, then be transparent about it. We've had members that possibly some, they, you know, it's been recorded anyway, that some haven't even showed up sometimes, 40, 50% of the time for the vote. And that just blows my mind. You have to be there. And if you can't do that mission, then you need to put someone else in that mission who can actually do what they're called to do. And when it comes to the budget, I don't think people realize how many, how much that affects. That affects our schools. Mm-hmm. That affects our teachers. Yep. And you can say, well, I'm all about private schools and Christian schools. I get that. But the majority of our children go to public schools. And education is not the only thing I'm going to focus on, by the way. But they go to public schools. Those are the products of your society. So you can sit back all day and say, I don't have kids in school. It doesn't matter. And I would argue with you and say, oh, yes, it does. And so you need to pay attention to that. But I don't want you to think I'm just all about education. There's other reasons I'm running as well.
Well, would you like to enumerate some of those as well while we're
I would like to think that there are so many things that I feel like that we should talk about. And one of them also is military support. That's a big priority for me. And I know Moore County in particularly, they favor veterans a lot. And I'm very proud of Lee County Schools. We have 10 Purple Star schools. I don't know if you know what that means, but that means they support the military families. Now, I was big on this calendar flexibility, and people like, well, why? In the education department, because we got to start school earlier, change the calendars where our kids could be tested before Christmas. That makes it equal. That's constitutional. So those kind of issues would come up. And so for me, we really do need to be, we don't just get people here in North Carolina at Fort Bragg and just say, okay, you've done your service, go. We need to bring in businesses where they feel comfortable staying. We want them to stay here. And that includes things like helping their spouses, you know, have jobs and help them reintegrate into the community, which I think Moore County does a great job. I've watched Moore County, and I just think they're really awesome. And then I'm really big on something that, you know, that's kind of important to me as well, is also elections. Secure elections.
Yeah.
It should never be controversial. Let's think about it. And I don't see why any, you can call it sides, I don't call it that. Everyone should want a fair election. It's that simple. And most importantly, the people need to trust that. When you lose trust, you lose everything. And I think that's the most, I think that's one of the key issues that people tend to forget. They think, oh, well, somebody just didn't like that they didn't win, or they didn't like the outcome of the vote. No, if we have a fair and just process, I think that it would win the community's trust. And then they would trust that the people they put in the leadership roles were actually elected and they'll go up there. And then you got to run into something else as well. I get was, one question I got once was, how do they know they can trust you? And my answer is very simple. You've trusted me with almost 10,000 students, 1,000 employees, and 17 schools in Lee County. You trusted me to bring your sons and daughters back from Iraq and Afghanistan. You trusted me then. A Democrat governor trusted me as a state social services commissioner on that board. So I think that says a lot about what you can trust. And trust me, I'm learning this process as you go, because a lot of people will get elected and then they don't know what they do once they're elected.
Yeah, we've seen.
And so I have this. It's so funny. I've prepared. I've got all these little training plans and things that I do. And I love it. I love the challenge, and I love to work, and I would really like this opportunity.
A reminder that our guest is Sherry Lynn Womack. She is running for NC House District 51 this coming, well, I was going to say spring, but if you look at the schedule, and I would be a big advocate for going back to what I call primitive voting, which is paper ballots on one election day. If you look at the schedule coming up, you're going to come rolling out of the Christmas holiday season. Absentee voting begins on January 12th. And then you've got in-person early voting that starts on February 12th and goes all the way to the end of February.
Yes.
And then we still haven't arrived at the big one, which is Election Day. How do you feel about all this prolonged voting season that we have as opposed to an election day?
That is very true. It's kind of like we don't have a huge season for Christmas, do we? We celebrate it one day. You know, we have different holidays and stuff. And I understand the controversy. I want everybody to have the opportunity to vote, particularly with me in the military. I had to vote overseas a few times. Yep. And so I understand it, but it does seem like a lengthy process to make a decision. But as far as the short timeline, I'm like, bring it on. Mm-hmm. This is going to be fun. I'm excited. I'm excited for Lee County. I'm excited for Moore County. And they should be excited. They will actually have representation that shows up and works and does the best that they possibly can. That's all any of us that can do that's in the House. And I spoke with Neil Jackson today. You know him? I like him. He's a great guy.
Neil Jackson, District 78, represents Moore County, a lot of Moore County down in southern Moore here.
And you have one more that's in your jurisdiction? The third guy?
Ben Moss.
Yeah, Ben Moss. And so I think we'll all be a good team, and I think we can all work together because in the end, we all have the same goal and objectives. We all believe in faith and family and freedom. And I think that is what's going to make the difference when you have representation up there. You want people who represent your values that can't be bought and doesn't have, you know, a dog in a hunt per se. The number one objective is to do is what's best for Lee County and Moore County.
And what is the business climate like these days in Lee County? We hear a lot about the impending growth of population. We also know that business and manufacturing is coming to this part of North Carolina. How do you foresee that kind of growth in the near future?
Well, you can definitely see that Lee County is growing. I'm excited about that, but I also want to make sure that we have the resources that we need. See, people just go, oh, well, this housing went up, or oh, we got this over here, and we built this, and we bought that. Well, where's your fire department? And by the way, is the police department funded appropriately? And that's not something we would do there, but these are questions I would ask as a member of the community, mm-hmm. you know, because you have got to have them. And then you've also got to look at the things in the community, because even when you make all these housing things, that doesn't mean that you've properly funded your schools or your emergency services. And that's something that I think both sides need to make sure that they really look after, because if you don't have the appropriate law enforcement and the security or the safety that you need, you're just headed down a disaster. You can put up buildings anywhere you want to, but are you prepared for it? And so I see that growth. It's happening in Lee County, and it's happening in Moore County. And people have different views on it. Some people, you know, they love that good old country thing that they mm-hmm. had before. I first moved to Lee County. They used to have these little 4th of July parades. They were the cutest things with little kids and dogs and wagons. And then as we get, you know, as we progressed, and some of those things kind of go away. But something that never changes, and that's the belief in family and values and freedom.
And please tell us, where can people go to learn more about you and your campaign?
Well, I have a Facebook site and a website. I hadn't intended to do that at all anyway until the 1st of January. I'd appreciate family members spending time with their families and send me money for campaign dollars or anything right now. I think the top priority is they should be with their families and enjoy Christmas mm-hmm. and all that entails, because trust me, politics is around the corner and it gets crazy when you start getting all these text messages and phone calls and all that kind of stuff. But I am on social media, and it's Sherrilyn Womack for NC House 51.
Sherrilyn Womack, number 4 or F-O-R?
F-O-R.
Sherrilyn Womack for NC House 51.
Yes, sir.
.com?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, we appreciate it.
There's a lot of dots, .orgs and .uss and all that. Sherrilyn Womack for NC51.com. Yeah.
If you just put in Sherrilyn Womack, trust me, you can find me.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today, and
thank
all
you.
The best in your campaign.
Well, I appreciate it, and hopefully I'll get to see you again.
You bet.
All right. Thanks, sir.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.